This is the Inside Pitch with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by Light Up Media Group. Now, your host, former USA Baseball National Team coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Inside Pitch. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. I'd like to welcome and thank everyone around the world who's currently listening to our show. Today's show is brought to you by Audible.com, a great resource for audiobooks. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day trial, and that's free at audibletrial.com/insidepitch. You know, there's over 180,000 titles that you can choose from on your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MPS player. After you listen to the show, do me a favor. Go to your Facebook page, tell everybody about it. Go to Twitter, email everybody you know, and spread the word so we can get more listeners on the show. Also, if you like the show, go to iTunes, Stitcher, or any major podcast outlet and click subscribe. Give us a 5-star rating and a review. If you like the show a lot, you can write all kinds of things down. As you know, we'd like to get started right away because we want to get right into the subject matter. So let's go ahead and begin with our first guest, Mike Pinno. Now, let me tell you just a little bit about Mike before we bring him on. Mike is the Chief Operating Officer and Team Manager of the Frontier League Championship Southern Illinois Miners Independent Professional Baseball Team. His rare combination of baseball knowledge and being a chief operating officer for the team is very unique. And the Inside Pitch believes this will set the path for other clubs to follow in order to create a championship way. Now, Mike is in his 10th season as manager with the Miners, having compiled an unbelievable 513-349 win-loss record since being the manager in the inaugural season. Mike has the best winning percentage in the league's history and is the league's all-time winning manager. He's got 6 playoff appearances and, as we mentioned before, the Frontier League Championship in 2012. What is amazing is that he has won so much but yet promoted 43 players to professional baseball, and 3 of those players have made it to the major leagues. What makes Mike unique and great at what he does is that he has taken his professional speaking skills since 1990 to Fortune 500 companies on brand strategy, corporate culture, and client experiences to the Miners' baseball operations and organization. Now, his focus on the business side of the Miners is to guide the organization to creating a Disney-like fan experience, extraordinary customer service, and rewarding partnerships with area companies. Listen, to sum it all up, Mike's a great friend. I've known him for many years. He's extremely knowledgeable in the game of baseball, and along with his ability to create a winning culture, makes him a very special person, in my opinion, and one of the best managers at any level, anywhere in the world. And you know all our guests at the Inside Pitch. I've been to over 30 countries and worked with a lot of managers. By far, Mike is at the top. Now, what's great about this evening is our topic, creating or crafting a championship culture. And I cannot think of anyone in the world who can speak on this topic better. So let's get started and welcome Mike. Mike, how you doing?
Hey, Pete, I'm great. Thanks, man.
I bet that was a hell of an introduction, wasn't it?
It was. Boy, I got a lot to live up to. I've got to correct one thing, though. As much as I would love to take claim as being the all-time winningest manager, Fran Reardon, who'd been in this league for a long time, has still got me by 113 wins. So I still got a little ways to go, and he set a really high bar. I got a lot of work ahead of me yet.
Well, see, you don't know. I have one of those magic balls. That's why I can I know you're gonna beat that record, so I might as well just say it ahead of time.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I always believe in visualization.
Hey, listen. Here's the first question I'd like to get started on. It's a question, but the main thing is I think I want the listeners to know a little bit about, you know, how you got started in baseball, and then all of a sudden it got to the Southern Illinois Miners and all these seasons and winning a championship, and boy, you've done a lot. But give the listeners a little, you know, idea of how this all began somewhere in your career.
Well, Peter, it's kind of a strange thing. This was certainly nothing that I ever had envisioned in my life. I didn't ever see this part. I have been a professional speaker for a long time now. This will be 25 years, and had been going around the country doing presentations to corporations, speaking at national conventions and conferences, and loving doing that, which I do just with great passion in doing a great job as a speaker. And I had gotten asked by a man named Rich Simmons, who was the head baseball coach at Oakton Community College in Des Plaines, Illinois, to be his pitching coach. And so I thought I'd give it a try for one fall. And I had such a great time and made great relationships, many of which I still have today, with the guys that played on that team. And a few years later, Rich had retired and gone into he'd been doing it for 30 years. And I went in and applied for the job, and they gave me that opportunity. And our very first year, we won 41 games, which is a school record. And if you ask the players, some of them talked about the culture that I brought that was different. And so we ranked fourth in the country that year, which was the first time that had ever happened. And I loved what I did. And so I did that a few years. Along that time, I meet a guy named Pete Caliendo. And we're next to each other in the gym. And you had your gold ring on from the Pan Am Games. I said, hey, what's that ring you got on? And you and I ended up in a conversation. And we talked about, if you remember, the metal game of baseball. I had an extra copy at my house. I dropped it by the ballpark for you one day. We had lunch a couple weeks later. And our friendship started. And you had recommended me along the way to Art Stewart to be a scout with the Royals. And through scouting and doing some of the independent league scouting, I met Matt Noakes, who was a former major league great catcher, Silver Slugger Award winner. And Matty, when he got a job to be the manager of the Joliet Jackhammers, offered me an opportunity to be on his coaching staff. And so did that for three seasons, had a chance to manage my own club in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Ben Zura, our wonderful owner, sold the team during my second season, and I was out looking for a job at the end of that year. The minors were just going to get started then. And Eric Haig, who was president of the organization at that time, reached out to me. I had been recommended to him by a few different people, asked me to meet him and bring a resume. And as I would do in just the business life, I didn't bring a resume. I brought a book. And the book was, How Do You Build an Organization from Scratch and Build It into a Dynasty? And I broke down what, for me, were 10 pillars that you had to build in order to make it work, to build this foundation. And I went into detail with each one, my philosophies, how I would do that, and a five-year strategy in each one of the areas on how you would build on each other. And so at the end of the meeting, he said to me, I'll have an offer for you in 48 hours. And thus began my opportunity with the minors. It's a lifelong career job. This is honestly the best job in all professional baseball. I will trade mine with anybody. And it's the best. I have the best owners, John and Jane Simmons. I could not ask for better, more supportive owners, and to give me the autonomy to do the job that I do every day.
You know, and you know, you and I obviously, and the listeners don't know this, but they will now. We go back a little while, and Mike's helped me a lot in my baseball career, not just that, but in the ability to be able to market myself and what I do in baseball. But one of the things that I learned, and you know, it's interesting you brought it up about the gym, because I always go back to when we met at the gym. And I always felt that one of the things I noticed about you was you're not afraid to talk to anybody at any time, anywhere. And, you know, you're the one that saw the ring. You're the one that made that first, you know, introduction. And I, you know, on everything you just told us, I think it's a great learning experience, you know, on how you, you know, got the job at the Southern Illinois Miners, what you built in that book that you talked about, but also your personality. And, you know, talk a little bit about how important a personality is in everything that you do.
Well, it's funny. I have a sign in my office, and it says, Not every conversation will change your life, but any conversation can change your life. And so, honestly, Pete, you were one of the guys. You had a profound effect on my career and where I am today. And it came from one conversation. I asked you about your ring. And those happen all of the time. One of my great friends in business and in life today came. We were both at a conference. We were both getting coffee in the back of the room. Ended up in a short conversation. And years later, he became one of my biggest clients. And today, one of my best personal friends. It came from a conversation. And so I don't think you can be afraid to reach out to people and, frankly, just be a nice guy. I don't think it's that tough.
Yeah, you know, and that's a learning experience, I think, for a lot of coaches that are going to be listening to this around the world. You know, baseball is not just about teaching the game. I mean, it's about personalities. It's like you said, it's about how you treat people. You know, you treat people how you want to be treated. But you have a unique way of doing things. You've got the personality, and I appreciate the comments also about myself. I mean, all I did was pretty much like anything else, was just introduce you to some people. But, you know, then we became great friends. But another unique thing you have is because you're able to take your business side, your marketing side, your speaking side, and put it with your baseball. Now, we'll talk about the baseball part at the second half here. But in this half here, what I wanted to understand was that advantage you have with the ability to market and speak and do all that, how you put that in the baseball part.
Well, what I did, Pete, was I looked at bringing business strategies to the running of a baseball operation. And a lot went into that. I read, you know, as from our conversations, I'm an avid reader, and I'm always looking for the new idea. One of the things I've tried to get our employees here with the minors to understand is a concept I call what else thinking. That if you are driven by the new idea and you're always thinking about what else could we do, your business is always going to be better. Your team is always going to be better. We've gotten so wrapped up in this game of it's always been done this way or I've always done it this way. And I believe in the concept of the naive question, which is, it's a little thing that was in the book Moneyball. And what they talked about was, if we weren't already doing it this way, is this the way we'd do it? And so if that's the way you approach your business and everything, imagine how it could be if you were trying to improve every aspect of what you do. And so at the end of every year, we evaluate. If I'm just talking about the baseball side now, we're going to evaluate, what did we do well? What can we do better? What else is out there? What's the next new idea? And so I tried to bring those business philosophies to what we do on the baseball side.
Now, you've got this relentless drive, you know, since I've known you. And I haven't known you since the beginning, you know, when you started in your business. Where did this all start? How did you develop this drive? And can you develop the drive? Is this something that anybody can do?
Well, I don't know that I had it when I was younger. I think that as you get older and you learn more things and you get more experiences, you hear from another idea. I mean, as you know, I'm studying everybody who is the gold standard of what they do. I'm studying what Nick Saban does to building an outrageously great program in Alabama. Fan or not, that doesn't matter. You can't look at what they've done and go, they're not the gold standard of what they do. Whether you like Bill Belichick and New England Patriots, he has built a culture of winning there that is unparalleled almost. And so I look at guys like that. I look at Theo Epstein. I look at Joe Maddon and the culture he's built and look at those ideas and say, how could I use that? You know, I'm always doing crazy things, you know, within the clubhouse and all that stuff. And like, I may see an idea Maddon does and say, well, I can't do that, but I could do this.
Now, you also talk about a lot about, you know, creating a culture of expectations. How's that created? Is that, you know, is that all year? Is it before the season, during the season?
Well, I think a couple things. The first, our number one pillar here with the minors was I wanted to create a player's best baseball experience of their lifetime. And so from the time a player signs with us, I want him to feel this is the best thing he's ever done. So we start with signs with us. He gets from us an 8x10 photograph of his name up on our scoreboard. Now, I didn't come up with that. I stole it from the Seattle Mariners. They did it when they signed Robbie Cano. And, oh, that's a great idea. We're going to take that. The player, the next in the package, gets a T-shirt with our team name, and on the back it says the Miners Way. And he gets a handwritten letter welcoming to our Miners family, not our team, our family. And that goes to him. That's 2 days after he has signed with our organization. I want him to have the feeling right away, you're going to be part of something special. When guys walk, they pull up to our stadium. On the outside wall are some of the great Miners who've been here before. When you walk into our clubhouse, we have the Miners Honor Wall, which is the photographs of every player who's been with us, who's ever been an all-star or been signed by a major league organization. The other side of the wall has giant collage photos of our championship celebrations. It's got photos of all of our clubhouse celebrations with champagne. And, you know, we've had a lot of those. So I want the feeling when they walk in to be, wow. Then they walk a little further and there's a poster of our team that won 20 straight games, a Frontier League record. I want the feeling to be, you know what? There have been some pretty darn good players here before me. The expectations are high.
Now, I remember I've been an independent ball for about 10 years, and you know, I've never seen a manager so involved in the culture aspect of the game. You know, most of the managers are concentrating on the you know, prior to the game, getting ready or during the game. But, you know, the culture aspect isn't really stressed from what I've seen. This has to be a difference maker when it comes to building a championship team.
See, my feeling, Pete, is all of us have the baseball stuff. We all have good hitting coaches and good pitching coaches. Some of us have better scouting information than others, but we all have the basics of that. For me, the culture is, that's the differentiator. That's the thing that can be the separator to create a consistent level of success.
All right. Recently, I know you and I were talking, you talked about if at a game or after a ball game, when you guys leave a clubhouse, it's cleaner than it was when you first got there. What's the reason for that? And how can others learn from this? How does that make your players better? And how do you do all that?
Well, a year or so ago, I'm reading a book called Legacy. It's written by a man named James Kerr. And Legacy is about the New Zealand All Blacks rugby team. They are the most successful sports franchise anywhere in the world. You can, beyond, you know, they talk about the great Yankee teams. These guys have won 85% of their games in their history. So James Kerr, an author, gets inside the All Blacks to write what's behind their great success. And so last year, I meet with my team, and I'm reading to them a section of the book right at the beginning. And the way it goes is something like this. When you are facing the All Blacks as they prepare to do the haka, you are facing more than just a team of competitors. You are facing a culture, an ethos, a belief system, and an identity to a standard of excellence that is unparalleled. That's how it starts. He goes on to talk about that there are certain things that they do that are unlike anyone else. One is a thing called sweep the sheds. Here's what's behind it. He's describing a scene where they are playing the game in France to go to the World Cup Championship, which is held every 4 years. As it happens, by the way, the All Blacks have won the last two World Cups, so they've been the perennial champion for the last 8 years. Mm-hmm. They win the game in France to go to the World Cup. Big celebration. Obviously, there's 100-some thousand people there. The celebration goes into the clubhouse. All the media comes in for the interviews. And then after the media leaves, they have two rituals. They all share a toast to the player of the game. And then the two senior leaders go to the corner of the room, and each of them pick up a broom. And the two of them begin to sweep the inside of the sheds. And so in the sheds, by the way, are like the locker rooms, the clubhouse. They happen to call them the sheds. So the author asked the manager, Graham Henry, he said, why do you do that? He said, aren't there janitors or clubhouse personnel who can do something like that? And he said, no one takes care of the All Blacks. The All Blacks take care of themselves. And he said, well, why wouldn't you have a rookie do it, though? Mm-hmm. And he said, that would be the wrong message. That would be the message contrary to what we want, which is the senior leaders to every member of that organization, that there is no job too small or insignificant for them to do at the highest standard of excellence. And so I relayed that to my team, and I was so proud of them. That afternoon, they went out and bought a couple of brooms and dustpans. We brought with us, when we went on the road this year, a box of garbage bags. And before we would leave any clubhouse, it would be immaculate. Wiped out, the lockers wiped out, garbage thrown away, towels all put away where they were supposed to be, and the entire place swept. And it didn't matter. Win, lose, win a series, get swept, it didn't matter. That was our standard as to what we wanted. And I was incredibly proud of my guys for jumping in and saying, that's the way we're going to do things, because we're minors. That's a level. That's a standard.
You know, that is just outstanding. And the reason I asked the question was because, you know, we're dealing with a lot of coaches around the world in the U.S. that are working with young players. You know, they're working with high school, college, youth players. Here's a great example of a professional team that has A-ball, double-A, triple-A players that you're able to, you know, sell them on this and the concept and why it's so important. That just goes to show that if it can be done at that level, it can certainly be done at any other level and should be done at all levels. You know, it's embarrassing a lot of times when you go to a game and you see, you know, both dugouts, they leave and it's just filthy. It just doesn't set a very good, you know, standard for your club, or, you know, it doesn't look good. But here's the other thing is your attention to detail on this is incredible. Now, you know, as you know, I've been to Japan a lot, and the Japanese are extremely detail oriented. You know, we've talked to La Russa before and talked about how detailed he is on everything he does. Why is attention to detail in all everything you do, whether it's the baseball side or business side, so important? And how does that translate into winning?
Well, kind of first of all, one of the things you mentioned was the players and getting guys to buy in. I believe in my heart that players want to be a part of something bigger than themselves. They may say they don't want rules and structure, but they really do. And they crave it. And they respond to it. I'm not talking militaristic. I'm talking about having a set of standards that's the way we do things. I remember an example. Matt Noakes and I were talking, and he was telling me the story of how he was catching with the Tigers, all-star catcher, gets traded over to the Yankees. And he said, I'd been there a couple weeks, and he said, I'm catching every day. And he said, one day we're playing on a Saturday afternoon, it's hot, and we're murdering the other team. And he said, and I'm still catching, and I'm looking for the rookie. Why is he not in here catching? He said, and I got lazy on a ground ball went to second base. Second baseman threw the ball away. I'm chasing the thing down. I come in after the inning, and I'm getting ready to take my gear off. And he said, Don Mattingly walked over to me, put his arm around me. He said, Matty, you're a Yankee now. Act like it. We don't ever take a playoff. And Matty said, it told me something, that it meant something to be a Yankee, that there was a standard. And if anything, I hope that I can impart to my players is it means something to be a Southern Illinois minor. And how you represent yourself and how you handle yourself outside of here is really, really critical. How we leave a dugout, how we wear our uniforms, all of that is all part of our standard. But to your question about detail, I think businesses have to operate on details. You can't miss little things. And, you know, and they get missed. I mean, I'm going to miss things from time to time, but it's not out of a lack of care. I think those things matter. Every little thing, when a player walks into my clubhouse on the first day of spring training and he sees the board with every attention to detail from our exact schedule, minute to minute, if we're taking ground balls, if we're going from 10:20 to 10:45, it's exactly 10 10:45. It's not until I'm done with it. We have very specific schedules. The guys know what groups they're in. They know where they're supposed to be every minute of the day. And I think they take some comfort in knowing there's a sense of organization to what we're doing here.
Now, do you have players that are leaders and, you know, they kind of self-control all that? You know, if they see a player, just like you talked about Jeter, or do you set – you have certain players that you expect them to do that, or you make them team leaders or anything like that?
I think guys evolve into that. I tend to look for players. When I talk to a guy about possibly coming to Southern Illinois, I really explain to them what we're all about, what we do, how we do what we do. I offer to have him talk to other players about it. As you know, we have a video that we send them about what being a minor is all about. And so I've been really lucky to have really great guys, great quality guys come in here. And with that generally comes some degree of leadership. And so I'm always going to have, at least I've always had, a number of guys in every clubhouse who just frankly take care of things. I never one time had to ask guys, hey, did we bring the brooms to clean out the clubhouse? Not one time. They take care of that.
You haven't had any captains or anything?
You know what? This year will be the first year that I've ever had one. I'm going to name a guy this year. Last year I had a guy, Steve Marino, who took it upon himself to take all of the duties that were involved from loading the buses to once we arrive, all of that stuff. And he broke down a list of everybody's responsibilities. I never had to ever worry about it again. It was all taken care of. When you got the right guys, the right leaders, they want to take that responsibility because they're prideful of that they're a part of something.
Yeah, you got to love that. And, you know, here's another thing you hear all the time in the game, but I'm not sure people really talk about it the right way. But you hear all the time that that team's got chemistry. Now, I got a feeling what that means, but can you give me an idea what you think it means?
Selflessness. That it's not about me. And I'm going to tell you, I stole that line from Joe Maddon. I heard him talking about the concept that at the end of spring training, he talked to guys about, it's not about me. If it's not about you, you'll get the bunt down. If it's not about you, you'll understand that we're going to hit a guy here because the matchup is better, because it's not about you. So if you get a bunch of guys that it's not about them, then that will tend to happen. Now, one of the challenges I run into is I've got guys coming from all over the place. I've got guys who are coming out of major league organizations. I got a guy who was in AAA last year. I've got a guy who this is his 10th year of pro baseball. And then I've got the guy who's coming out of college and he got missed in the draft and a scout said, hey, this could be a guy for you. I have a wide mix. Guys show up here. We have 36 guys for spring training. I can keep 24. I have 12 days to make my decision where I'm going to have to send 12 guys home. And so for spring training, it's not just about me to prepare our team. It's to figure out who are the right 24 guys. It's not the best 24. It's the right 24 for us. And so, as you know, we do a lot of different things during spring training to bring them together away from the field to see who's a match, who buys in, who gets what we're trying to do here.
You know, and I think since you're on that, because I know where you were going, I think it's important that our listeners hear this next part, because you do a lot of things that are off the field that are unique, interesting, fun, that have nothing to do with baseball. And some do. Some have a little bit to do with baseball. Explain some of those.
Well, again, all of these are ideas I got from somebody else or saw it someplace else and said, here's how I could use it. We do a thing called Miner's Idol. The San Francisco Giants did it one year. I saw a little article on about it and said, hold it, we could do that. So every year we have a diamond club, a big banquet room up in our stadium. We bring all the players up there and the rookies sing karaoke. We have three veteran guys who are judges. A couple of them have been known to dress in drag for the event. It's a boatload of fun. We have a contest for the winner. And we see how personalities are. We see which rookies can take a little ribbing and have some fun with it. We've had some guys do shows for the experienced guys. and it's been fun. We do cooking classes. I saw that the Scottsdale Culinary Institute does cooking classes for all the players in the Arizona Fall League. And I went, hold it. I got guys making $600, $800, $900 a month who are living with host families. I need to teach them how to feed themselves. And so we do cooking classes for them. We go bowling one night. We go and play bocce ball. Last year I added one. Our name is the Southern Illinois Miners. That means something here in this region. It's not just a nickname. It stands for coal mining. And our region is really big on coal mining. It's where, if I were to ask the people in our fans, raised by a show of hands, how many of you have a relative that worked in the mines, virtually everybody's hand's going to go up. So I reached out to one of the coal mines, and I said, I'd like to bring my players for a tour. And we took our players 4.5 miles in. Took 30 minutes to get there. And they went and learned what a coal miner really is, what that means when they wear that on their uniform. They learned how these guys go down. They work 9-hour days. They get a 1-hour break, not outside. They get a 1-hour break inside.
Wow.
Coal mine. And it was a great way for our guys to, I know some of them were uncomfortable. Well, you know what? When I put them on the mound with the bases loaded and nobody out, and I'm asking you to try to get out of this, it's uncomfortable. I want you to learn how to be comfortable in uncomfortable situations. We got a lot of media publicity for it. The people in our community love that we did that and acknowledge that to us. And then the last thing I do right before, after the roster's made, day before opening day, is I rent a wiffle ball stadium. I believe that this game's supposed to be fun, and it gets really serious when it's professional baseball. So I bring all our guys. We have a 5-on-5 round robin World Series. Coaches play, trainer plays, radio guy, and because we're all going to be together as a family all year. And so we play wiffle ball. We have a barbecue out there and just have a blast and go back to the pure fun. Pitchers get to hit, hitters get to pitch, because both of them think they can do the other. And we have a blast with it, and that's how we finish our spring training and get ready to start our season. And no, then, Mike, of course, as you know, opening day, every player who wants to learns how to eat fire. 18 inches of mouth-searing, teeth-melting, permanently scarring flame, and they learn how to eat fire because, again, it's fearful. But I'm not going to let them get burned. I do it, obviously, in my motivational programs, and I want to make sure guys have that experience if they want to.
Youth Baseball Talk with Jim Cromer.
Where did that come from for you, like the throwing more?
I had a great guru in Johnny Sain. Johnny Sain was the most successful pitching coach in the history of Major League Baseball. And I wanted to listen to the greatest teachers in the history of the game. Well, I only met a couple. Johnny Sain, Bobby Cox, Jim Beacham, wonderful teachers. And then I ran into about 250 to 300 coaches that had no clue what the hell they were doing.
Listen at youthbaseballtalk.com or download the show on iTunes or Stitcher.
Yeah, and our coaches around the world, you know, and also in the U.S., you know, that obviously we don't want you to go ahead and have kids eating fire right now. Much professional it is.
Yeah, you know what? Be a professional and know how to do that.
Yeah, before you start actually implementing that. But here's what I love about all this, Mike, is, you know, when all these coaches, including myself, listen to this, you know, here's a professional team that, you know, you're selecting players according to personality. So you're really starting to create a culture before you even put the team together, because you're selecting certain players. And then you're continuing to create that chemistry or culture with the team prior to the season, during the season. I mean, these guys, like you said, are having fun. They're becoming teammates. I mean, and if this can be done at this level, and this is why I love the show, because I think we can get a lot of information out there. This can be done at many levels. You know, a lot of times a baseball coach just looks at it as, you know, I'm teaching baseball. Well, you're here, you're teaching life skills. You're teaching a lot more things. And this is why I love the show. Now, here's what we're going to do next. We're going to take a short break. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about some social media and some things that we want to talk about, players and identifying players and all that. So let me just take a short break here and we'll be right back. At this time, I'd like to, for all our listeners, we'd like your help. Every time you go out and buy something on Amazon, first go to your website and click on Amazon banner. It doesn't cost anything. It'll give us some credit and helps keep the show going. Also, you can go to Amazon.com and purchase my book called Youth Baseball Drills. There's over 100 baseball drills in the book. You will love it. And you can email me anytime if you have any questions. Okay, now we're back with Mike Pinto, the COO and manager of the championship Southern Illinois Miners Independent Professional Baseball Team. So, Mike, let's get to the player side of this part. You and I have talked about this a lot, man, whether it's players or coaches or even can include any professional in the game. I want to talk a little bit about the social media with your players because I know you train them on all this. And also appearance. You talked a little bit about appearance, you know, when they're off the field, things they do off the field. But explain a little bit of how important that is in the overall basis of the organization.
Well, again, we were talking about spring training and I have 12 days to make these guys a family and make sure they get what we're doing here. So we have classroom sessions. And one of the classroom sessions we do is social media 101. There are players, high school, college, professional players that are destroying their careers because they posted something on Facebook or they decided in a fit of anger, they went ahead and put a tweet out there. And I am always on the lookout of those and I capture those. And so those are all part of a multimedia presentation I do with them, along with a video I was able to get from 2020 about how people are losing everything in their lives because they put something on social media. We have a saying here. It's hashtag don't press send. Don't press send. That moment when you're angry, you know, you're upset because the umpire called you out in strike three, do not press send. If you're out in public someplace, and this is a great story some fans will appreciate about a Major League superstar, James Shields, was a teammate of one of our former players, Matt Fields. And they went out to a place to grab a bite to eat when they were both in high A ball. Went to a place after dinner or after the game, have a bite to eat, have a beer. And he said three absolutely beautiful women came over and started talking with them. And one of the girls starts to pull out a camera and wants to get a picture. And James said to her, I'm sorry, ladies, I never allow photographs after I've had a beer. He was smart enough to know that once it's out there, it may never come back. There's a site out there called @drunkathletes that someone sees a professional athlete out in public and they're drunk, they take a picture of them, they can post that picture out there. It's never coming back. And so we really have tried to stress to our players, you're out in public, never allow photographs or don't take pictures with a beer or liquor in your hand. Just don't do it. Be careful what you post. Be careful what you like. A couple years ago, there was an instance with one of the St. Louis Cardinal players. He was liking porn on Twitter. Well, that became a social media thing. There was a Houston Astros player who did a gay slur about Justin Bieber on social media. And that went out there. You can't get that back. And so shame on me if I don't educate them on that, so that it helps them in their life.
And now when you're
selecting umpire during spring training to talk to our players about the umpire-player relationship. Critical. It may mean the difference of a ball game. It may mean the difference of your batting average. You might pick up 10 hits a year because umpires actually think you treat them like human beings.
And what about during or before, you know, the selection process, how much social media do you use to look at, like, when you're about to recruit a player?
First thing I do when I am recommended a player is I go to their social media. I'm going to check their digital footprint. I want to see what they tweet, what they like. Is this a guy that's a team guy? Is he sarcastic? Is this guy sniping at people? Is this guy critical of his former teammates? I'm looking at all that stuff. So I'm going to go back and I'm going to look at their history to see, is this a guy that's going to be a fit here? It's one thing to be something on the phone. It's another thing for me to check their social media and go, this is not a fit. And that's happened a lot.
So it you actually will not select a player depending on something that he may have posted.
I won't give you names because that wouldn't be fair. But we have walked away from guys because of social media profiles.
Well, and I know you do extensive research on all your players. So you do it on a social media aspect. And then talk about now how you do it on the baseball side. What goes behind selecting a player?
Well, the first thing is that I have kind of my own predictive model of what I'm looking for in particular types of players. In pitching staffs, if they're a starting pitcher, what numbers am I looking for? How does that translate to the level they were at? Would that translate to our guys? As you know, scouting is all about comparisons. So how does this guy with what he did compared to our guy who was at the same level in the same league? How did our guy do? And our guy did really well, and this guy's numbers match up. And now the next step is, all right, I'm going to check with the scouting director. As you know, over a course of time, you get to know more and more and more people. And so I've tried to build a network of people that I can send a text to, make a phone call to, and say, hey, can you tell me about this guy? And fortunately, you know, I have guys with different teams that will say, Mike, I remember last year I sent one to a coach who's a hitting coach in one of the major league organizations, said, hey, can you tell me about this player? And his response was, he wouldn't be a good minor. Mm. And that was all I needed to know. That's it. End of story.
And when you were in college, similar thing. I'm assuming you went back and talked to a lot of different coaches and so forth.
Well, we had, you know, kind of a geographic area we pulled from, so I wasn't able to go to the same degree. But, I mean, coaches' recommendations are everything. And if players don't get that part, they are really missing out. Today, I did a job recommendation for a guy that's been with us for the last couple of years. And I started the recommendation to the particular boss and said, we play 96 games in 106 days. This player's been with me 2 years. We spend virtually every day together. I know about a player's work habit, discipline, character. I know how they handle success and failure. I know whether they're a good teammate. I know whether they're coachable. I know how they are with our fans, our public, our sponsors. I know how they are with children. I know if they're active and good in the community. So when I tell you, like I am telling you about this particular player, that we are proud that he represented our brand every day, he will be a great representative of your brand as well. That's a pretty good recommendation for somebody. And so we know a lot about a guy. As you know, you spend all day with guys for 2 years. I know a guy and I know what he's really like. And we have a saying here in Southern Illinois, and it's always a minor, that once a guy is part of the minor's family, he is always a minor the rest of his life. And there's not a week goes by. I'm not a job reference for some player. I've done three of them in probably the last week and a half, I think, maybe four. And these guys are important to me. This is a lifelong relationship. This isn't a, hey, you played for me, you played your year, thanks, get out of Dodge, good luck with your life. This is a lifelong relationship. I am constantly in touch. Here, I'll give you one. 5 minutes before you and I had a call, I got a note from Gordy Gronkowski, the brother of Rob Gronkowski. Gordy played for us in 2011. And he sent me a text with the name of a player that would be a great minor. That's kind of what happens. Guys are part of our family forever.
Well, now, you know, obviously, you know, and I know you know, it's the Italian in you, I believe, because, you know, it's got that, you got that family culture that you've created. And I believe it's natural. I mean, because you can tell it's natural. But the results from all this are outstanding because, as you said, you know, these guys, you stay in touch with them even after the season. I mean, whether they through jobs or maybe they're getting married, you know, this isn't false. This is something that happens because of what you've created. So there's a there's a return on your investment, even though you're not looking for that return.
Yeah, I really don't think of it like that. One of the things that we do when our players have children now is that when one of our players has a baby, they get from us a T-shirt with a reminder that what they didn't read in their playing contract when they were with us is in that really small print that I have future independently rights to their future son or daughter. And the guys have fun with that. We send them a onesie for them, for their baby, with a Miners logo on it. And so I love getting those photos back of their children in Miners garb, you know, when they're first born. You know, these are guys that were a big part of us, and we're proud that their children are kind of are by extension.
You know, on the flip side, let's talk about on the field, spring training, and also we're going to get spring training during season. I'm assuming that you're pretty tough also. There's that love, but then there's that toughness. Talk about spring training and how you prepare for the season. I know you're preparing way ahead of spring training, but once you get in the spring training, what are the things that you think you do well with your team in spring training that translates to a winning season?
Well, first off, I have an extraordinary coaching staff. My guys are really, really good, and we meet before we start. We lay out our detailed schedule, and they take care of their individual responsibilities. We have a Miners way. I expect my coaches to be the caretaker of our program, but they then take their individual groups. But we do things like, for example, if we're doing PFPs, it's real easy to go through the motions with PFPs, as you know. Not if you've got a 4-second stopwatch on it. Watch the difference in how your players play when you do that. When we're charting every bullpen, so if a guy's throwing a bullpen, every pitch he throws is on a chart. It's marked on a chart, and it's done specifically to throw a pitch in a location, not just going through the motions. And I think if you bring that attention to trying to prepare your guys for games, I think I can shorten the curve and try to get started in a good way. Does that make sense?
Well, it makes great sense, and I hope coaches listen to this because, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, going to spring training, I don't want to say all clubs, but the certain clubs that I've seen in spring training, whether it be independent or professional or Major League Baseball, you know, sometimes that's all they're doing is going through the motions. Then I'm wondering, how's that going to translate into the real game situation? But now, you know, what happens if you have a player, you're going through your drills and fundamentals during spring training, and he's not quite doing it the way you want him to do it? How do you deal with that?
That's where I can tend to be a little tougher. It's funny, the guys joke about 7 to 10, Mike, that I'm kind of like Tony La Russa between 7 o'clock and 10 o'clock. I am extremely focused and really dialed in on every single pitch. You don't see me smiling during a game. It's not that I'm not having fun and not enjoying it. I am really bearing down. So the coaches have said to the young guys who come in, do not freak out. He's not ticked off. That's how he is. And as one of the players said to me, he said, I was really afraid to come over here. He had played on another team in the league, and he said, I was afraid I was coming to a military camp. He said, because I see you standing there in your spot, in your dugout, and it never smiled during a game. And he said, I had no idea you were like you are. You know, I mean, we do so much fun stuff in our clubhouse. I cook for our guys. You know, we have Italian Day. And last year I did 108 hand-rolled meatballs. It took me 3 days to cook for the guys. This year, we're taking it up a notch, and we're doing Italian accent night. Every guy, when they come in, we're going to have pictures of great Italians in baseball all around the clubhouse. On one TV, I'm going to have Godfather 1. On another TV, I'm going to have Godfather 2. And on the third one, I'm going to have Goodfellas. I'm going to have Sinatra on the sound system. And every guy is going to get a little card with Italian phrases. And they must speak in an Italian accent all night long. It's going to be a blast.
That could be tough for some people.
It's going to be. And then I am one of those guys, and again, I got this from Joe Maddon. Thank you, Joe. He believes that, his words, winning professional baseball games is really tough. Every team is really pretty equal. And so it's a war to win a game. And if we don't win, he said, I'm not real happy. Well, that's me. And I don't like hearing laughing and joking. And so if we lose a ball game, my clubhouse manager knows those TVs are off. The music is off. I don't want to hear any guys laughing or screwing around in there for 30 minutes, 31 minutes. The TVs go back on. Music goes on. Hey, we'll go fight and go get him tomorrow. But 30 minutes, I want you to think about the fact that we didn't win this ball game today. But if we win, Pete, it is a giant celebration. So by the time we get up to our clubhouse, the lights are off. We have colored flashing lights everywhere, strobe lights going, the music pounding to it. And as the players have come to call it, club mineshaft. And they have a blast. And then if you remember when you were a little kid, when you won a ball game, sometimes you got to go out for ice cream afterwards. So we have ice cream sundaes available over in the corner of the clubhouse. And there's a bowl of sprinkles, because if you've watched the Progressive insurance commercials, as you know, sprinkles are for winners.
You got to love it. I'll tell you what, I'm ready to play for you. You want to fax me over a contract?
Absolutely, Pete. You know I love you to death, man.
Oh, boy. I'll tell you what, we're having some fun on this show. I'll tell you that. You know, here's another thing that I remember you telling me about. I want the listeners to hear this because, again, a lot of this stuff, you know, we got a lot of young coaches, and I say young coaches, experienced coaches also. And I think this stuff's important. You talked about one time about batting practice. Your guys do something unique in batting practice that a lot of other teams don't do. Maybe you could explain a couple things.
We do a lot of different things. What do you mean?
Well, explain the uniform part first.
I think one of the habits we've gotten into in independent baseball is we've gotten a little casual. And so we wear full uniforms during batting practice. We have a BP uniform. And the guys, it can get hot in Southern Illinois. It can. If it's that hot, we probably won't take BP on the field. We'll hit in the cage. I've got to protect them over the course of the season. I need them to be healthy all year, not just for one game. But if we're going to be on the field, we're going to look it. And as guys said, Mike, it's really hot out there. And I said, I'll tell you what, when I go, and I can't use this anymore, by the way, when I go to Yankee Stadium and I see Derek Jeter taking BP in shorts and a T-shirt, I'll think about it.
That's right.
I can't use that anymore, but I don't think anytime soon I'm going to see the New York Yankees taking BP and wearing shorts and a T-shirt.
Yeah, I got to believe that kind of sends a message, you know, that – it's just, I don't know, not that you're lazy. I'm not sure what the message is, but it doesn't sound like a clear message when you're in shorts, T-shirts. I know in professional baseball, even at the World Baseball Classic, you know, they got to have numbers on the shirts. I mean, the scouts are there. But I think it's that you're setting that standard that this is the way you play the game. This is the way you act. This is the way you dress. This is the way you do certain things in the ball games. So let's talk about the game itself. You said you're focused during the game. Now, are there times where – what do you do with – when you see something on the field that you really don't like at that moment, you address it then?
Never.
Or address later?
I never do. Unless it's something that may come up later in the game, but it's something that happens with a player, and thank you, Mr. La Russa, for this one, a 24-hour rule. I never talk to a player about something that happens during the game tonight. I know my little Italian temper, and I can only be destructive to our relationship. If I wait till tomorrow, cooler heads prevail. Tomorrow I can be instructive. I can be constructive. If I do that tonight, I'm going to be destructive in the motion of the moment. So I can talk to a guy tomorrow about kind of what he was thinking. If I do it during the game, one, it tends to be confrontational. Two, other people are around, and I don't want to show a player up. In my younger days as a coach, I was a yeller at the very beginning of my career. I don't do that anymore. I just don't. There's no value. I have a clipboard that I keep notes on during games, And at the top of it, I put this little note to remind myself. It said, it doesn't help. It doesn't help. Well, me blowing up a dugout, me yelling at a player in front of his teammates, it does not help the situation.
Yeah, and that makes – I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense. I really do, and I'm glad you brought that up. And now I remember this, and I thought this was a key thing in at Oakton. When you were at Oakton, I saw this, and I don't see enough of it. But, you know, you demanded, obviously, a lot of your players when it comes to hustle, whether it's on and off the field and all that. But I remember a number three hitter hitting a pop-up, a high one in the infield, and not hustling to the base. He was pulled from that game. That sent the message right away that doesn't happen on this club, correct?
No, I'll tell you what I've been known to do, because again, I don't want to show my players up in front of the fans. I don't want to do that. I don't want to show them up in front of their teammates, but I have to send a message. So my trainer knows we're watching the game. If something like that happens, I'm going to go out with the trainer, because he must have pulled his hamstring. So I'm probably going to have to pull him.
That's, you know, and that, you know what, that is a good way, you know, and it brings up an idea, because it's interesting you said that. And, you know, I just want to mention this to all the coaches out there. You know, I'm not a yeller and a screamer, even though, like you, I'm Italian. I've been known to snap once in a while, but I believe in everything you're saying. And I remember kids not hustling on the field. And what I would do is I would similarly call them in and say, you know what, it doesn't look like it looks like you're tired. I think you're a little tired. So I'm going to take you out of the game for a little bit. And then once you get better, you know, or once you feel better, then let me know and I'll put you back in the game. You know, it was sending a message that you're not hustling because you're obviously tired. Something maybe similar to that.
Yeah, see, I don't want to get into a thing with a player. I had a superstar, honestly, back a few years back. And he didn't have a good batting practice session. I thought something was going on. And we get in the game and hit a ground ball, kind of jogged it out. He made eye contact with me. He knew what I was looking at. And the next time up, he hit into we have guys on first and third, hit a ball to second base. Guy bobbled it, beat it to first base. Had he run, and we would have scored the run, and he didn't. I pulled him out of the ball game. He went down and sat down in the far corner of the dugout and kind of pulled his hat down. He was ticked off. And again, I'm not going to get in that conversation in front of everybody, but mm-hmm. we had it the next day. And it's like one of those, I tell my players, I have an open door, and I really mean that. Anything going on, come in and talk to me. You wonder why you haven't played in 3 days? Come in and ask me. I will tell you. You wonder why I pinch hit for you last night? Don't wonder. Don't talk about me out during BP. Come in and ask me. You may not like it. You may not agree, but you will get the truth. But if you come at me, you better be prepared, because then the nice, calm Mike Pinto changes and I will blow you up, because there's no way I can let a player show me up in my clubhouse. Can't happen. Not once, not ever. And so, you know what? If you did something wrong, just own it. Just own it. You know what, Mike? I shouldn't have done it. Don't come in with an attitude because you got pulled because you didn't run last night. Just wear it.
You know, that's great. That's great advice for all players, and I love that. Now we're coming down to the end. There's a couple other things I just want to talk about. One of them is that most players go through this. Now this could be believe it or not, at 10 years old, 15, 18, all the way to professional baseball. You're going to get cut by somebody, by some team. And I want you to give the players, maybe a coaching advice, but players advice too, how to deal with that when you're cut. What do you tell your players when you cut a player, whether it's out of spring training or whether it's during the season or not producing? Maybe some advice for our people out there.
Well, first off, and not to take what they did in the movie Bull Durham and when the manager said, this is the toughest job. There is no question. It is the single toughest job that I have. When think about it this way, a guy who's got to us, and maybe this guy was in double A or triple A last year. And so you think about, to be that good, he was the best little league player in his area, right? Yep. He gets to high school. He's the best guy in high school. he goes to college. In some of cases, I've had guys that were the all-time winningest or pitcher, all-time leading hitter in a particular big major college. And they go into pro ball, and someplace along the line, they got cut. They come to Southern Illinois. And think about it. Their entire lifetime, their identity is they were a professional baseball player. And then when I call them in, they're not. And if I don't have a level of empathy and compassion and handle that, I'm sorry, but they're not a name and number to me. And if this is personal, and I have to have that level of compassion. At the same time, if I have to do that, be a professional. Sometimes it had nothing to do with your performance. It may be a salary cap issue. It may be I've got classifications. I can only have so many of X number. It can be any one of those things. And be a pro and go get a job. Go give it another shot with somebody else. And if you do it right and they call me, I will be glad to give a recommendation as far as what kind of person you are and how you handled yourself. But if you're a jerk, if you're kicking stuff around, if, you know, I can't stand this place and all that kind of thing, we're done. Now we're done.
And then what about, you know, I'm even thinking about younger players, and maybe you do this with older players. Is there advice, you know, if it's a physical advice, you know, if it's a, you know, pitching wise or something that he hasn't done well in pitching or hitting or fielding, I mean, if you can give him advice to go on and get better at something, do you do that?
We do that in spring training, especially when we release a guy and we say, this is something we think you need to improve in your game. Here are some ways you can do it. If it's a pitching coach, he normally will give some specific input. If it's a hitting guy, my hitting coach will do the same thing. And so we try to give them some guidance. And many times hey, I understand. I appreciate the opportunity. And we're glad they were part of it. But I can only keep 24 out of 36. I don't like it. It's just it's the business we're in. And there is I heard it said this way. It's a great game, but it's not such a great business.
Yeah, that's a great way to end it. But we're still not done. There's one more thing that I want you to let the coaches out there know. You know, is there anything advice-wise for coaches out there, whether it's young coaches or coaches in professional baseball, that, I mean, if you were to give them one nugget, because, you know, I knew this was going to be an excellent show. And if you, and coaches out there, if you haven't learned something, then you weren't listening. But Mike, is there anything else that you can give our coaches out there to kind of help them in the coaching business?
I would say a couple things. One, if you're going after a job, if you're looking to go after a job, they're not hiring a coach. They're hiring someone to build a program for them. Show them how you're going to do that. Don't tell them what you've done. Tell them what you're going to do. That would be my best advice for somebody who is interviewing for a job. Give them your vision. Write it out. Be detailed. Show them how you're going to create something special. Paint a vision for them as to what they're going to have. And as a coach, be constantly driven to find out more information. The minute we say we know it all, we're done. If I look at all the things we do now that I didn't do even 12 months ago, it's a very long list. You know, we are just constantly driven. And my coaches, too. I mean, I've got really great coaches that are always looking for what else? What else? New idea. How can we be better? And if you're doing that, you're going to be a pretty darn good coach, and you're going to have a great program.
That's great, Mike. Listen, we have come to the end, and too bad, because we could do this for another 3 hours. I want to thank you so much for being on the show, Mike.
Anytime, my friend. Anytime, anything for you. You know that.
All right. And listen, everyone listening to the show, remember, if you want to learn more about all our guests, get tips, see videos, and more, check us out on Twitter at Inside Pitch Show. And don't forget our Facebook page. We got a lot of information, a lot of videos on facebook.com/Inside Pitch Show. Go to our website. Also is going to have a lot of details for you. InsidePitchPodcast.com. Don't forget to have all your friends, your coaching friends out there, go on the website and click on iTunes and Stitcher and become members. So that way you can listen to all the shows. You can listen to shows anytime you like. We're going to have a lot more. Plus, don't forget, email me. I love taking questions. I love your emails. So email me at peter@insidepitchpodcast.com. Also, if you want to recommend a guest, you can email me. You can anything you like. Feel free to email me anytime. I'll get back to you right away. And do us a favor. Go to iTunes and Stitcher, as we mentioned. Hit subscribe. Give us a 5-star rating if you love the show. Give us a good review. Also, remember to check out our shows on Lineup Media Group for shows like Youth Baseball Talk and Let's Get It On. Check it out on lineupmediagroup.com. Please share our shows with all your friends on Facebook and Twitter, and also by email. Remember, coaches, education is the key to building the foundation of our sport. So keep getting smarter every day. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. Have a great coaching day, and I'll see you on the next show.
This has been The Inside Pitch with Peter Caliendo, a Lineup Media Group production. Get access to all of our podcasts like Youth Baseball Talk, You're on the Clock NFL, and Let's Get It On with famed MMA referee Big John McCarthy and Sean Wheelock. Online at lineupmediagroup.com and on iTunes and Stitcher.